As the cost of traditional health care continues to rise, many would say that the quality of traditional health care is declining. And so, many families begin considering the alternatives, and there are many. But are the alternative health care options viable for the conscientious parent? And what role does nutrition play in assuring that our kids have the best chance of flourishing in all areas of healthy and holy living? We'll talk about that right here on Licensed to Parent. Welcome to Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy. I'm Rich Rosel, here with the host of Licensed to Parent, Trace Embry. And Trace, the last time we had today's guest on this program, you stated that you had a lot more questions to ask. So for some unknown reason, she has agreed to subject herself to your questions once
some
again.
Abuse. And not only did I have questions to ask since she was last on our program, but I've had some experiences in the traditional medical arena since then that have only caused me to ask more questions.
So you've got more questions.
I absolutely do. Dr. Jean, welcome back to the Licensed to Parent broadcast.
Thank you.
I should mention that Dr. Jean Lawrence is our guest. I neglected to officially welcome her. She is a certified nutritionist. She's a master herbalist, a master iridologist, and a doctor of naturopathy. She practices in the nearby city of Toccoa, Georgia, with her husband, chiropractor Dr. Philip Lawrence, at Lawrence Health and Wellness. And as we mentioned last time she was on the program, she works with patients of all ages trying to do something we wish more healthcare providers would do, and that is find the root cause of the illness rather than just treating the symptoms. And today, she's also going to help us learn how to spell the word sphygmomanometer, which is a blood pressure device, just in case you're wondering. Oh. Go ahead.
Well, Dr. Jean, welcome back to the broadcast.
Thank you.
When people think of doctors, they think of someone, once they've been sick or injured, to go see a fellow with a lot of letters behind their name and get them back on track, get them back on their feet. You're more of a preventative type of doctor. Would that be right in saying that?
Yes. We don't like to wait until the damage has been done and patients have become what we term medical wreckage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's harder to fix it at that point.
Right.
So it's better to prevent things from happening and, you know, forego those horrible conclusions that unfortunately people realize.
So would or could someone with a common cold or flu come to you before going to an MD?
They could. What we do is we try to support the immune system. We do not diagnose any diseases, but we do try to support the immune system to ward off any more complications that can come from not handling it in the early stages.
But once a patient is plagued with strep throat or measles or something like that, would they come to you for something like that?
Well, usually with something like measles, which people don't usually have much anymore.
Yeah.
We don't see a whole lot of that, but we do see a lot of sinus infections,
right,
which are actually fungal in nature most of the time and can come from overuse of antibiotics.
Okay.
So when someone has a sinus infection, the body is trying to rid itself of toxins. But normally what people do is we get a cold or we get a sniffle and we want to suppress those symptoms. So we run to the drugstore or we run to the medical doctor and say, I need this to stop so that I can work, so that I can function. But the body is suppressing the symptoms. It needs to come out. Things need to be let go so that toxins can be released. Otherwise, it just surfaces later on.
So let's talk a little bit about antibiotics. There's a lot of buzz that they've been known to weaken your tendons as they attach to your bones, and you can grow an immunity to them, other things. What are some of the hazards of antibiotics that most people aren't aware of?
Well, when I see children sometimes that are 8 to 10 years old, and I ask the parents how many rounds of antibiotics they have had, I am shocked at the number. Sometimes they will say 15 to 20 rounds of antibiotics within that short period of time.
Meanwhile, they're filling the kid up with sugar and white flour and all the other stuff.
Right. And so a lot of times antibiotics are overused. It's not that I'm against antibiotics because they do have their place.
Mm-hmm.
We've all heard of emergency situations or pneumonia or things where antibiotics were saving lives. But the problem is, with other things, is overuse of those.
So you're not campaigning against the conventional healthcare system
no,
in general.
No, they have their place, but when someone runs to the doctor every time the child has a sore throat or a sinus infection, and they prescribe another antibiotic, the body builds up an immunity to this, as you stated. Mm-hmm. And then later on, they get some kind of problem and antibiotics will be useless against it.
I've heard that if you're taking an antibiotic, you want to put a probiotic in your system. But I never heard that from a doctor, from an MD. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. When you take an antibiotic for an infection, it not only kills the infection, but it also wipes out what we call the good guys in the gut.
And what do the good guys do in the gut?
The good guys are actually healthy bacteria that are fighting off pathogens
What's a pathogen?
A pathogen is a potential disease-causing organism.
Okay.
So when you have a healthy gut flora or good guys in the gut, good mm-hmm. bacteria in your intestines, you're more likely to ward off colds and flu and infections and things like that, because infections kill more people than anything else in the world. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to have a healthy immune system, and it all starts in the gut. So when someone takes an antibiotic, then and they don't use a probiotic, which is to put the healthy bacteria back in, which
Acidophilus.
Yes, and it's found in yogurt. And a lot of people tell me, well, I eat yogurt. Well, you'd have to eat a room full of yogurt in order to get enough of those bacteria. But what happens is if you don't put probiotics back in, then you start to have all kinds of symptoms. Which are insomnia, craving for sweets, acid reflux, all kinds of stomach problems, constipation, diarrhea, brain fog, joint pain, fibromyalgia, allergies flaring up. You can have a real sensitivity to smoke, cigarettes, perfumes, chemicals. You can't stand to walk down the detergent aisle in the supermarket.
Well, what are some options to antibiotics for, say, strep throat, the flu, sinus infections? What are some options that they can do natural way?
The main thing would be to eat just meat and vegetables. And if they're really sick, to stick to especially soup, bone broths that are made at home from, you know, cooking bones down.
Those are good or bad?
Those are excellent.
Okay.
They're full of minerals.
But what about the Campbell's soup type of thing? I mean,
no,
I've heard those aren't even worth opening the can for.
Processed soup contains a lot of MSG, and we'll probably talk about that later. But homemade soup is always better. And of course, homemade chicken soup is what everybody wants when they're sick. But what do most people eat when they're sick? When you're tired, you tend to crave junk. We've all been there. We're tired. We just don't feel well. And we want comfort food.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to crave and eat junk food, which is exactly opposite of what the body needs during that time. And if you're not hungry when you're sick, then don't eat. Because the body is using all of its resources to fight off an infection. So it takes a lot of work to digest your food. It's the hardest work the body does.
Okay. There was that expression that I remember hearing for years and years. And I always get confused as to which way it goes. I believe it's starve a cold, feed a fever, or is it the other way?
Well, it can be either one.
Okay, but neither one is necessarily correct.
Yes, if you have a fever, you're probably not going to be very hungry.
Okay.
Your body is so busy using all its defenses to fight off this infection, it doesn't have any room left over to digest a heavy meal. So the best thing is rest, no sugar, and eating things that are very easy to digest, such as soup.
Well, I was thinking things like Jell-O and ice cream. Those aren't part of the healthy list.
No.
And I'm amazed at the number of people who aren't willing to do that. I mean, my wife, she's pretty disciplined in a lot of areas, but you know, when it comes to this approach, she's just not all that disciplined about that. And the other thing is, I think there may be a confusion between what a naturopath and a homeopathic doctor do. Can you explain that difference?
Yes, a homeopathic doctor, of course, practices homeopathy. And the origins of homeopathy was in the 1800s by Samuel Hahnemann. And he discovered that if someone had a disease or had symptoms, if he gave them a small dose of something that made the same symptoms occur, that he would stop it. And the most famous example of that is quinine for malaria. When they gave quinine to healthy people, it would cause the symptoms of malaria to appear. And it's still used today. Hmm. So homeopathy is like cures like. This is how this works.
Is it legitimate?
In certain cases, I believe that it is. I've seen, of course, there's a lot of, you know, just go on the internet and you'll see pros and cons to everything out there.
Mm-hmm.
But especially homeopathy does work in several cases, especially with muscle aches and pains, arnica. is a very famous remedy for muscle aches and pains. You can also take it internally, not the cream, but you would have to take a homeopathic preparation. That's very, very helpful for bruising and muscle aches and things like that. So there's a lot of them that are still around and still used. But, you know, you have to go to somebody that really knows what they're doing with homeopathy. It can get pretty involved.
Is there a biblical precedent for this approach to medicine?
Well, the Lord said in Genesis that he'd given us every herb-bearing seed in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that was for our health. He knew before the foundation of the world, the diseases that we would face, the toxins we would be exposed to. And he made provision for that in plants.
Okay. So marijuana for glaucoma would be a legitimate approach then?
I think that's a whole separate program that we probably don't need to get into. Real quick, we do need to take a break. This is Licensed to Parent. Our guest today, Dr. Gene Lawrence, and we're talking about some of the alternative therapies that we really need to investigate for our families and especially for our kids to best equip our own bodies to take care of themselves and to heal themselves. We're talking about a natural approach to medicine and to diet, and we'll be back with more conversation on Licensed to Parent right after this. It's difficult to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you're face-to-face with a teenager who argues with you at every turn. Maybe you and your teen can't talk to one another about anything without it getting complicated. For nearly two decades, Shepherd's Hill Academy has been bringing healing to teens and families from around the world. Up until now, that help has come through its residential treatment facility in North Georgia. But now, your family can benefit from that experience at home through Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching, designed to help you discern God's will for your family, build good communication skills, deal with defiant children, and more. Our family coaching team will work with you by phone, in your home, at work, even while you're on the road, to help your family develop a game plan to succeed. Sign up for Shepherd's Hill Family Coaching today by visiting licensedtoparent.org. Live the family life your family was designed for. Click on the family coaching banner at licensedtoparent.org. Teen rebellion, depression, addiction, rage, cutting, and suicide are destroying our families today. But there is a way out. Shepherd's Hill Academy offers a 12-month, Christ-centered, nonprofit residential program where kids are being transformed with a biblical worldview and often medication-free. Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias is just one of many Christian leaders who understands what's happening at Shepherd's Hill Academy.
It really is such an honor to come alongside Shepherd's Hill Ministries and Licensed to Parent to rescue those who have been seduced along the way. I cannot gainsay how important this is, and to get behind a ministry like this, one will find the rewards to be extremely powerful in changing society.
Get the help you need at Shepherd's Hill Academy. Go to helpmytroubledteen.org, helpmytroubledteen.org. You're listening to Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long residential program for teens in crisis located just north of Atlanta, Georgia. Our host, as always, is Trace Embry, the founder and director of Shepherd's Hill, and I'm Rich Rosl. And our guest today, once again, is Dr. Jean Lawrence. She practices in the nearby city of Toccoa, Georgia, along with her husband, who is a chiropractor, Dr. Philip Lawrence. And what we're talking about today is some alternative fixes, if you will, to modern medical problems. And Dr. Lawrence, two things that come to mind to me, especially as we're looking at our kids. ADD or ADHD and autism. Both of these are prevalent. I mean, we've had the over-medication of kids because of attention deficit disorder. But you were suggesting that there are some things that we're doing with our kids' diet and maybe with some of the ways we're treating them medically, that if we would stop that, it might turn this around or at least significantly affect it. Walk us through this.
Well, when I have an autistic child in the office, the first thing I do is ask the mother about her health.
About her health?
Yes.
Okay.
Because children get their intestinal flora, as we were discussing earlier, from their mother.
Okay.
So if mom has had mega doses of antibiotics and had problems with anorexia and weight problems and all kinds of deficiencies, then, of course, the child is going to be deficient as well. So the first thing I do is ask the mother, how is your health? Do you have stomach problems? Do you have intestinal issues? And did she have those during pregnancy? Because that directly affects the child. So the child has more susceptibility to allergies and ear infections and autism and all these other problems if their gut flora is not healthy.
Okay. But if there are problems as a result of that, are there things that a mom and dad can be doing to counteract that?
Yes. Usually the children are not getting any good fats. So a good fish oil or flax oil is very important.
Okay,
to
them. So you are a proponent of using supplements when they're not getting it through
their
natural
absolutely.
Diet.
I mean, okay. Are any of us eating like we should?
So all these DDs, ADD, ODD, ADHD, these are things that are coming out of the woodwork in the past few decades. Is this, would you say this is solely nutritional issue, or are there other components to the equation?
Well, there's been a lot of controversy surrounding the cause of autism. For example, the Amish don't seem to have any autism in their children, and they don't vaccinate.
I was going to ask you about inoculations. I heard there's a link there.
Well, of course, science will say it's never been scientifically proven, but there seems to be more prevalence of that for children that have had certain types of immunizations. Also, with ADD children or children that even have seizures, the number one thing to do is to get them on a what's called a ketogenic diet, which is meat and vegetables again. So here we go with no sugar, no dairy, no wheat, and also good fats and enzymes. Now, most children that come in that have these problems, I say, does the child ever complain of their stomach hurting? And they always say yes.
Hmm.
So there's a stomach issue right off the bat.
But tell me about the hazards of corn syrup. You hear a lot about that. And then the hydrogenated fats, MSG, is it?
Yes. MSG is monosodium glutamate. Over 90% of processed foods contain some form of MSG that excites the brain and makes you want to eat more.
So it's addictive.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I have a cookbook from the 50s where they actually are using MSG in recipes. Mm. Add a quarter teaspoon of monosodium glutamate. This is because they thought it was safe. It was just a flavor enhancer to make the food taste better.
What wasn't Accent, I believe, it wasn't that basically MSG? I don't want to slander that company, that was a food additive, and I was thinking that may have been.
I'm sure that was out for years, and people were using that instead of other spices. And even one dose of MSG in studies in rats causes holes in the brain.
Wow. I want to go back to the hazards of corn syrup, because I hear a lot about that.
Yes.
So tell me what you know about that.
Okay, corn syrup is actually a food.
And what are the common foods that this is found in?
Okay.
So parents can understand.
But high fructose corn syrup is no longer a food.
No longer a food?
No, it's no longer a food.
It used to be a food?
Well, it started as corn syrup, which was a food, but then it was changed into high fructose corn syrup.
Okay.
And this leads to plaque buildup. It causes mercury toxicity. We don't need any more of that.
Okay.
And it leads to fatty deposits in the liver. And it's found in all soft drinks that are not diet soft drinks. It's found in all the soft drinks. Also, it's in ketchup. That's why a lot of them will say on the label, contains no high fructose corn syrup.
Oh.
So
because
it's just
the norm
everywhere.
Is for
yes,
it to
the norm
have that,
is for that because it's a very, very inexpensive sweetener. Yeah. It has bypassed sugar in products by 8,000 to 9,000%.
And if it's a processed food, it's likely to be in there.
Yes.
I mean, I've seen it in just about every packaged food.
And what happens is the liver sees this as it does alcohol. So children start coming down with pancreatitis, which is inflammation of the pancreas.
Mm-hmm.
They start coming down with cirrhosis of the liver, things that alcoholics get.
Mm. Well, Dr. Lawrence, you have, of course, thoroughly scared the daylights out of us with all these labeling issues, including, by the way, your comment a moment ago about MSGs being included under the heading of natural flavorings.
Yes.
I can't think of a food that's a processed food that doesn't say includes natural flavorings.
Right.
But that's not saying that everything has MSGs just because it says natural flavorings, is it?
Usually they're trying to hide it in there somewhere.
Okay. It's the catch-all that allows them to sweep a number of things under the carpet.
And actually, certain foods that say no trans fat on the labels are actually allowed to contain up to half a milligram of trans fat in them.
So no, still say no trans doesn't fat. Mean no anymore.
No doesn't mean no anymore.
Well, you mentioned before the program that there's a website that we can go to if we want to get a little more information behind all this, the truth behind the lies, if you will. What is that website?
It's called truthinlabeling.org.
Now, are they an organization that is fighting for truth in labeling, or are they also an organization that has the gift of interpretation?
Well, I would kind of leave that open to the person that's on the website.
Okay.
But people are confused when they read labels, and parents go to the store, and it takes a lot of time to read labels. So I tell patients, you're going to have to learn how to read these things. And the simpler it is, the better it is for you.
First thing you need is glasses.
Yes. But if you can't understand something that's on the label, it's probably not good for you.
Yeah. Right.
And if you can't pronounce it, don't eat it.
Well, I don't know how much time we have left, Rich, but I did want to ask her about the good and the bad oils, because I hear a lot of good things about coconut oil, olive oil, and a lot of bad things about canola oil, for instance, and palm oil and all those things aren't supposed to be so good for you. Is that right?
Palm oil is actually good for you. Oh, canola oil is usually rancid by the time you get it.
Okay. And then even olive oil has a problem when it's heated up too much, right?
Yes. Olive oil is better for eating on salad dressings and things like that. It's not as well good for cooking as coconut oil is or sesame oil. Mm-hmm. Sesame oil is excellent for the body. So that's a very, very good cooking oil. It stands a higher temperature than olive oil. Okay. And the major shift in this country after World War II was the shift toward more heart disease was when we shifted to vegetable oils. So we started eating Mazola and Wesson and corn oils. So when we did that, everybody started to get sicker.
Are you a proponent of eating butter rather than the processed margarines, I'm guessing?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. I have a short story to tell about that. May
All right.
I tell that?
Okay.
My father was a diabetic. He found out a year before I was born, and he ended up having a first heart bypass, which a lot of diabetics become heart patients. And the cardiologist told my mother to feed him Fleischmann's margarine and egg beaters, and neither one of those are actually foods. And so being the good wife that she was, she wanted to make sure her husband was nice and healthy, and she fed those to him, and he ended up having a second heart bypass. Now, if I had been her, I would have said, why did this happen if I did what you told me to do?
Right.
But the fact is that margarine clogs arteries.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Because it's not a food. It's one molecule away from plastic. And so when your body eats it, it says, what is this?
Well, corn syrup is pretty much the same thing, right?
Yeah, it just, the body goes, what is this? I can't break it down. So it puts it into the arteries. So when it says heart healthy on the margarine, no.
Let's switch to another oil, oregano oil.
Yes.
I've taken this when I feel a sore throat coming on or things like that. Tell me about oregano oil, the benefits of oregano oil.
That's a very powerful antibiotic oil. And again, it's natural.
Mm-hmm. But no one likes to take it. That's the thing I can't get my wife to take when she feels a sore throat coming on. Because
you can get some capsule forms, I believe, that contain oregano oil.
Yeah, but the actual oil touching the throat itself.
Yes, is very good. Mm-hmm. Very, very good.
Yeah.
Because it's a very powerful antibiotic. So it's natural, like garlic. Garlic is naturally an antibiotic. And so when people have MRSA, I always tell them, load up on the garlic because that's going to help to get that out of the system.
But will oregano oil or garlic oil, either one, will it actually cure a strep throat?
What these products are doing is they're enhancing, again, the immune system. And we don't have an immune system as much as we are an immune system. Mm-hmm. And we all face six major health challenges during our lifetime. And if our immune system is strong, they will appear and go away without us even being aware of them.
So you're basically saying that all oregano oil really does is strengthen the immune system that's already within you.
Yes. Just like the echinacea. A lot of people take echinacea, which is an excellent product. It actually serves to help vitamin C in the body work better.
I can tell you this. I mean, this is firsthand from the horse's mouth. If I swish coconut oil right through your teeth and gums and for like 20 minutes, my sinuses clear up. almost instantly. Now, I can't say they stay cleared up the rest of the day. But if I do that, you know, maybe three times a day, I can ward off a sinus infection that I feel coming out. Now, am I nuts for saying that?
No, that practice is called oil pulling.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been books written about oil pulling.
And there's more benefits than just sinus infection. So it's
now think back to what I said sinus infections were. They're fungal in nature. And coconut oil is antifungal.
There you go.
Because if you think about where coconuts grow, they grow in moist, warm climates where fungus would be very evident. And so coconuts are there to help people deal with this mold and these problems. So they would be more likely to have fungal infections. So the coconut is there to be used as an antifungal.
One final question, and then we have to let you go. How do you spell sphygmomanometer?
S-P-H-Y-G-M-O-M-A-N-O-M-E-T-E-R.
I just figured as long as I said at the beginning of the program that you would teach us how, that I should give you that opportunity.
Let me ask one practical question that parents might actually ask you.
Okay.
Mom takes her son or daughter to the doctor for a sinus infection. Parent says, I've been giving her, you know, oregano oil or coconut, whatever. And the doctor says, oh, those people, they're a bunch of quacks. How does the mom or the dad respond to their MD?
Well, fortunately, the child's health is still mostly in the parents' hands. And I have advised parents to not always tell everything that they're doing unless the doctor is holistically minded and understands these alternatives, because they're going to say, oh, that's useless. But fact and point is that for thousands and thousands of years, pharmaceuticals were not here. That's a relatively new thing on the scene.
But the answer they're going to give you, and the life expectancy was 26. You know, that's the answer I've heard. So how do you respond to that?
Well, like I said, infections. Infections have killed more people than all the wars and famines and everything else put together has been infections. So that's why the antibiotics against infections made such headway, because it was thought now we have a way to deal with infections. But infections are still rampant. That they haven't gone away just because antibiotics have come on the scene. Okay. But the best thing to do is to have a balanced approach to healthcare.
Right.
There's natural alternatives that are wonderful. And once in a while, you need medical intervention. But the most important thing is, if a child is taking an antibiotic, is to be sure and tell the parents that the child needs to quit eating sugar. Yeah. Now, I've seen children that come in with runny nose and sinus infection, and they have a sucker in their mouth.
And they won't. And the doctor probably gave it to them.
Yeah, they don't tell them not to eat that because they don't know that.
Our guest today has been Dr. Gene Lawrence, a master herbalist, a master iridologist, a certified nutritionist, and a doctor of naturopathy. As I mentioned at the start of the program, she's in practice in the nearby city of Toccoa, Georgia, with her husband, chiropractor Dr. Philip Lawrence. Their practice is Lawrence Health and Wellness. And Dr. Gene, you've been on before. We trust you'll be on again to help us keep our kids on the right healthy path.
Falling
off the wagon.
Because it does translate into behavioral issues.
It does.
Well, the next generation's health depends on this.
This is Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy in Martin, Georgia. To find out more and join us in supporting this ongoing ministry, again, we invite you to visit us online at licensedtoparent.org. Just click on the donate link to find out how you can become one of our financial partners. On behalf of Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rossel. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you again next time for Licensed to Parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless you. We'll see you next time.